Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Hillary, happy Monday. Welcome back to the Pinken Channels. We, of course, had the unveiling, official unveiling of Liam Manning this morning down at Carrow Road. His first press conference, his first words as Norwich City's new head coach. We heard from Ben Napper as well, a little bit of reasoning maybe why Liam Manning was appointed and the man. We were all at Carrow Road, so we're going to give you a little bit of reaction over sort of the next 45 minutes or so. We want your comments, your reaction to it. If you've seen the full video, whether it be on our channels or elsewhere this morning, Adam Harvey joined by Connor Southwell and Samuel Seaman. Connor, I'll come to you first. Let's just kind of delve into maybe your overall reaction walking away from Carrow Road this morning. You know, we've been to a few of these press conferences down the years, quite a lot just recently, maybe every year seemingly, hopefully maybe not for a while again. Sometimes it's quite easy maybe to get drawn in by the buzzwords, the alignment, the, you know, the sort of project, the connection, these various words that often come out. But this one to me felt maybe slightly different, maybe aligned a little bit more in terms of what he was saying. That connection obviously is key. What did you kind of make of it as a whole?
Yeah, I was actually on the drive into Carrow Road this morning. I was kind of thinking up my stats for these. So this was I've been this job, what, 6 years in September. This was going to be the fourth managerial unveiling that I've had. Obviously, Dean Smith, David Wagner, Johannes, and now Liam Manning. And I thought he was good. It's always easy. I think you always come away thinking they've spoken well and they've kind of put themselves across well. And I think, of course, you have to remember the context. This kind of is utopia, really, for a head coach. They've got probably the strongest connection with the sporting director, with the club. They've just signed. That's all very fresh and new. Clearly, you've got a fan base there who are waiting really for something to latch onto, to get their teeth stuck into, to feel enthusiastic and optimistic about. And of course, there isn't the context of any sort of evidence or results or any sort of background along those lines that make it easy for them. So of course, that you always have to look at it through that lens. But I thought he was good. I thought he was warm. I thought he was you could sense a real burning ambition within him to do well for himself, but also for Norwich City. And I was sort of intrigued how big he would go on kind of the local element. But, you know, certainly if I would have been advising him, and I'm not, but if I would have been, I think I would have said, look, that's a really good route in to establish some bridges with a fan base, to establish some connections. And I came away really impressed. I thought he was concise. He was to the point, but that came with clarity about what he wants, about what he's going to try and do. And I think he will have walked away today probably feeling very happy with his performance. And I think Ben Napper would have done as well. And I'm sure, and it'll be interesting, obviously, the Norwich fans are the most important people out there on this and in general. So we want to hear from them, really, in terms of what they thought. But yeah, I was impressed, and it was good to hear from him. And like you said, I thought it was, we came away last year from Johannes, who spoke really well and had some really good ideas, but it's all about how you can connect those to the players. And felt it was probably a little bit lighter in terms of football substance, what we could expect from a Liam Manning team. There was some nice stuff really about kind of the sort of possession that he's going to look to coach. But still a lot of questions around that point. But yeah, all told, I thought it was a good opening display from Liam Manning.
Yeah, same question to you, Sam. Obviously, you know, done a few of these down the years as well. What did you maybe make of Liam Manning compared to the likes of Dean Smith or, you know, Johannes Oftorp, David Wagner?
Yeah, I think Connor said 4 in 6 years. I've done 3 in 3 years. So the my stats are even more scary when you look at that managerial turnover. But yeah, I thought, again, that he did perform fairly well. And I would add all the same caveats as Connor, because as he said, you can't really lose unless you say something catastrophic at this moment in time. But what did stand out to me was also how much he spoke about that local connection. And naturally, there were going to be a lot of questions. And ultimately, you know, in that situation, you answer the questions that are given to you. But he could have gone in a slightly different direction, as I think we probably saw that he did when he was a Bristol City manager, and he was asked about that connection and almost played it down a little bit. So it probably tells us about how communications work and how different narratives can work in different scenarios. But I did find it very encouraging that he really wanted to talk about that and discuss not only the impact it had on him personally, but how it could almost help his connection with the fans. And ultimately, I think this is a fan base that right now and with reason isn't particularly happy. I think a lot of people are very pleased that the first Norwich-born manager or head coach is now in charge of the club. So I think talking that up and speaking about that a lot, being very sincere and I thought speaking about it quite well was really helpful for him. As Connor said, I think it was probably a bit too light on maybe exactly what he wants in terms of what he wants a team to look like. He talked about possession quite a lot. It's clear that that's something that he wants. He wants a proactive team. But maybe that was kind of part of the assignment. We know that although Norwich aren't lurching in completely the opposite direction to Johannes Oftorp, they are trying to almost soften things a little bit in terms of striking that balance between immediate achievement and idealism and the sort of ideological, philosophical approach that maybe Johannes took at times. I thought Napa was probably even more open about that pragmatism and that adaptability than Manning was. So maybe when you look at things that way, if Manning had come in and started saying, I want to see my team play out from the back every single time, I want to see this formation being used and we have our specific ways of doing things, then maybe fans would have been quite alarmed by that. And it would have been almost mixed messages when you think about the way that Napa spoke about it. So maybe going light on tactics was almost the plan. And, you know, it certainly was heavy on that that connection with the football club and with the fan base. And right now, when obviously there's no football, and we've spoken about the fact that can be a positive, but it can also be a negative, because these fans right now have only these words to go on. They don't have any wins to remember with Manning. So maybe really talking about that connection that you might already have even before there are any sort of memories created or any positive associations between the fan base and him, I think that's probably the right strategy. So yeah, I think they did it pretty well, but ultimately, yeah, it is the easiest win of all the press conferences that he'll do as Norwich City head coach. So yeah, you always take these with a pinch of salt, and certainly we've all had enough experience now in the last few years of them to realise that you can't take everything from these scenarios. But in terms of what he could achieve today, I thought he came pretty close to perfect. And yeah, I thought it was a pretty good unveiling as far as they go.
Yeah, sort of tying that maybe in a little bit, Connor, with his reasoning for why he decided to dip away from Bristol City, clearly a club that were maybe on the rise a little bit, managed to get top six. You know, you can maybe talk about the investment in January that wasn't there, and maybe this summer he didn't feel that there was going to be maybe the ambition shown by that football club, maybe compared to Norwich City and the stature of the football club, to try and eventually get to the Premier League. So what did you maybe make of his reasoning and sort of expansion, I suppose, on his reasons for why he moved to Carrow Road?
Yeah, well, I think as we said in the last one of these that we did, I know a lot had been made, probably more so at the Bristol end than actually the Norfolk end, about him sort of coming home and it being a geographical thing. I think he was very clear in his first answer, wasn't it, that it was about football primarily. It was football that is the driver, and all the family stuff is kind of a nice added bonus. If this would have been the same project, but way up in the northeast or way up in the northwest, I think he probably would be in the same position where he would have taken that job. And for me, there were two points I felt that were probably the most obvious in terms of it. It was the statement that he made around Norwich being a club that reinvests in talent. They do sell players, but also there's a portion of that money that goes back into reinvesting the squad. But I think it was probably also the ambition of the club more generally. And you look at his career trajectory, you look at the moves that he's made, the short-term, not short-term, but maybe short tenures that he's had at clubs. And that's largely because he's done good jobs places and other people have been willing to take him. He's clearly a very ambitious guy and a very ambitious coach. And the fact that in Norwich he sees a club that matches that, but also in Ben Napa, I guess, a bit of an ally, somebody as a sporting director who can maybe deliver some of those players and processes and squad that will help him achieve and unlock that within his career, I think is a real positive. And again, I said this last time, I think if I was a Norwich fan, I'd feel very positive and very excited the fact that Liam Manning has decided to swap Bristol City for Norwich. And equally, I think, again, when you look at it in the round, I can't sit here and lie to be some expert on Bristol City because I'm not, but the sense I get from down there, clearly it was a magnificent achievement to get them into the top six. We can discuss teams falling away or teams not being at the level or the points tally that they did it with, but to do it first time in 17 years, it was a generational success. And, you know, you can argue about the way he did it or his style of play or his youth development or the various other aspects, but in the pure black and white of it, getting Bristol City in the top six was a success for him. And what he's done this summer, I think, is clearly stack up the likelihood of him being able to replicate that with Bristol City compared with him being able to do it with Norwich City, and feels that he's got a better chance of achieving it and maybe even bettering it at Norwich City than he does at Bristol. And I think that should be, again, something that Norwich fans are hugely excited by. I think in these parts, and every club does it, every fan base does it, so I'm not purely beating Norwich fans with this stick, and look, maybe we're guilty of it as well. I think you can forget quite easily what a big club Norwich City are, particularly at Championship level. They are still such an attractive proposition at this level, whether they are third or 13th at this stage, because of the name they have, the history they have at this level, the resources as well is clearly a step up. So I think it's a bit of a feather in Norwich's cap that he's decided to come back to Norfolk and basically sees himself leading this project. I think a 4-year contract, look, what do contracts ever mean in football? But it is a statement of intent on both sides, and whether he fulfills it or whether he doesn't, that statement is still true. So yeah, all of that I think is something for Norwich fans to be excited by. And as Sam said, now I think I get the sense that this is a fan base that really, and we saw glimpses of it with Johannes Hoftorup, that are desperately wanting to forge a connection with somebody, with a head coach, with players as well, of course, but particularly a head coach. You look at the strength of relationship they enjoyed with Daniel Farke during his tenure here. That just has not been present in any of his successors. Smith certainly didn't have it. David Wagner struggled with that connection. Johannes Hoftorup felt like he did have that with Norwich fans, but obviously didn't have the success on the pitch where we saw it frequently enough. Liam Manning is now the latest of that. And I think clearly the Norfolk connections gave him a major leg up. But obviously alongside that, he'll need to win games. He'll need to show progress. He'll need to prove that actually he can advance this Norwich squad. And clearly, I think what I saw today was a real composure, first and foremost, but also a real self-confidence that he's going to back himself to make sure that a lot of these players do advance, that this squad does advance as a collective, and that he gets Norwich City up the table. And who would argue with him on the basis of his track record? It's a tough job. It's a big job. It's a job with lots of pressure, but I don't get the sense that that's going to be particularly phasing to him, certainly on the evidence of today's showing.
Yes, indeed. I'd agree. Ben Napper was on that table as well, Sam, taking questions this morning. He was maybe asked a little bit about the head coach search and why Liam Manning was the man for him. I thought maybe that the takeaway, and I think it was probably the reasoning we all felt that he veered in that direction, was the overachievement that he managed at Bristol City, maybe relative to what Norwich had in terms of resources last year. You look at Borja Sainz, you look at Josh Sargent, and you know, probably pound for pound, player for player, Norwich's squad, you know, if you looked at it across the board, probably looks stronger on paper than Bristol City. So was that maybe your takeaway from Ben Napper as the reasoning for why he opted for Liam Manning maybe over other candidates?
Yeah, I think there were lots of reasons that he sort of discussed at various points, but it did feel like, particularly for me, the sort of Championship experience was a big part of it. And although that wasn't necessarily something he spoke about too much in our last touch point with Ben Napper just after the end of the season, you did get that feeling that that bit of experience was something he wanted, not only in terms of as a head coach, but sort of knowing the league. And I think Manning was, he was keen to emphasize that he's got experiences beyond just the championship. I think he wants people to know that he can harness the talents of a squad that aren't necessarily just, you know, that type of player that he sort of had at Bristol City. But definitely when you look at the way that Torup struggled and the direction that Norwich have gone in with this appointment, it did feel like that championship experience probably was quite a big part of it. And I think, again, it comes down to that sort of balance. And we've spoken a lot about the fact that when someone gets sacked and when things don't go well, people want the opposite thing. I don't think it's that whatsoever. I think Manning was very clear that he does still want that progressive style of play. He wants to entertain fans. He actually even defended the idea of signing sort of young players as well, right? When he was almost given the opportunity to say directly, yes, Norwich need more prime players. He did explain that sort of younger players can be quite experienced as well. So I think there were various parts of that that were still the same ideology that Napa had when he hired Torup, but there are clear differences that are needed basically if Norwich do want to challenge for the playoffs next season, which it's now absolutely clear that they do. So I think that was a big part of it. Probably the connections that Napa has as well. He spoke about that, about the fact that he's worked with people who have worked with Manning before. So I think probably some of the noises he's heard from them, not only in the last few weeks, but across his career about Manning. I'm sure they have these sorts of, you know, I'm sure they're talking about football and championship football fairly regularly. And most of the things he will have heard from those colleagues will have been very positive. I think the man management that he spoke about towards the end was clearly a point as well. It felt like when Napa did get to that, although he'd already talked about a lot of the strengths that Manning has, he was very eager to get across that he was really pleased with Manning as a sort of an individual who could get the best out of players and could motivate players, which I think is interesting when you consider how Torup dealt with things and how things looked. Certainly that clip that came out from the club at the end of last season and the way that fans responded to that, it did feel like there probably needed to be someone who was, I mean, I'm sure Torup does have those abilities in certain circumstances, but I think they needed somebody who maybe understood championship players a little bit more and understood the culture specifically over here and how things work in championship dressing rooms. So, yeah, I think that was probably a big part of it as well. And from what Napa said, it sounds like there were a lot of factors. But, yeah, I think the championship experience was something we thought would probably be quite a big factor from early on in the process. And, yeah, it does certainly seem that from what was said today and from all the noises we've heard over the last few weeks and the way that the search has panned out, really, that was a key characteristic and something that Napa was certainly very interested in when it came to Manning.
Indeed, yeah. Obviously early in the summer, Connor, but the point was maybe put to both of them around maybe what next season's going to look like and maybe what the ambition is, what the goal is for the club and this collective group of players. What was kind of your feeling, I suppose, off the back of the response? You know, clearly playoffs has got to be the target, you'd imagine, based on what they said.
Yeah, and I think probably not so much a top six or bust kind of target. I think it's progress, isn't it? I think we all feel the championship is going to be a tougher league next year in terms of the teams that have come up, as much as the teams that have come down and some of those having some really big resource to go and spend. And obviously at this level, that can make a significant amount of difference. And you're always reliant upon maybe a team underperforming or whatnot to get in the playoffs. As to be fair, his Bristol City team did last year. A few of those teams, a clutch of those teams did underperform that probably allowed Bristol City to swan in on the points total that they did, under 70 points, which is pretty unheard of. And yeah, I think it's one that probably we didn't, I know it's kind of got lost since Johannes left, but certainly from what Ben Napa said, and look, we can only take him at his word, it wasn't a you must finish in the top six. I think it was a you must, as the season progresses, show that level of progress that actually your ideas are coming to fruition. And if you look at the jobs that he's done, certainly at MK Dons, took them from mid-table really to third in his first season. Oxford, he kept them in the division, took over sort of mid-season, and it was the following season. So I think he's proven that he's been a little bit of a slow builder at points, but he is a builder crucially. And I think the point that Sam makes is critical, not just championship experience, but EFL experience, English experience, because what this format does, what this league does, because there's so many games, 46 plus, you know, a handful of others in the cups, actually the contact time, the training time that you get on the pitch is so limited. So if you've got such a complex ideological style of play, it can be very difficult to implement over a long period of time, forget a short period of time. So I think naturally there does have to be adaptability. There does have to be, to an extent, some empowerment of the players and their own ideas. And clearly that is what the manifesto, I guess, that Liam Manning has stood on. The fact that what we're going to get from Norwich City is, yes, absolutely, similarities. Do they want to have the ball? Absolutely. And, you know, you can see from his Bristol City team, it's about where they have possession. And so much of that was in the opposition's half. But also so much of it is about empowering players to make their own decisions and to ensure that actually, well, if it's one straight pass and it's one long ball that can get you through on goal, then play it. And actually, if it is a, you need to be a bit more patient and probing in your build-up, then he's happy to do that as well. And I think all too often, irrespective maybe of injuries and selection issues and whatnot, I mean, how often did Norwich City have their strongest team on the pitch last season? Very rarely, but equally, how often did their approach change? Barring Portsmouth away and maybe a handful of others, it was by and large the same kind of flat pack solution to try and build a victory upon, and that can't fit. It can't be a one size fits all, or you're screwed basically. So that felt to me like kind of what he was standing on, and I think that championship experience does get overplayed. But is it a facet? Is it important to have that context and to have that understanding? Completely, it is. It can only be a strength for Norwich, and hopefully it allows them to progress a lot of those players in that dressing room who, you know, and I thought it was very interesting, he referenced Oscar Schwartau by name, but obviously he's part of that clutch that now have a year under their belt and everyone will be looking towards to really drive this on, and to have a coach that knows how to do that, but also has an ability to kind of coach different facets and different styles. I think that's only a positive for Norwich City, really.
Yes, I can see a lot of comments maybe around transfers and the summer window, which we all come around to, I promise, very shortly. Before we maybe get there, Sam, a little bit around maybe people within the club and the backroom staff was asked towards Liam Manning and who he wants to work with, Nick Stanley and Tony Roberts. I know Paddy directly asked him about and said, you know, it's important having people in the building who maybe understand the place, the culture, and sort of how useful that is. Maybe a little bit more of an update as well on Hogg and Kraus, as Finley's asking. So maybe where are we at and what did you gather, I suppose, on the back of the sort of backroom staff he wants to bring to the football club?
Yeah, I think just quickly on Roberts and Stanley, you know, that's not just about the idea that you want people in there who know the club. I think you speak to anyone really behind the scenes about the calibre of those two individuals. And I know particularly around set pieces, there were a lot of questions from fans, and I think probably valid questions when you looked at that record up until the last few games of the season. But yeah, Stanley and Roberts are really highly rated. And although I think there probably was a tiny bit of wiggle room if the absolute perfect candidate came along and said, I must not work with Roberts and Stanley, then maybe there was a tiny bit of wiggle room. But you did get the sense from pretty early on in the process that they were rated very highly, that they were club appointments, and that the club were pretty keen to keep them there. So, yeah, I think that's as much as Manning will definitely appreciate people there who know the players first off and know the club and the way that it works. I think also the calibre of those coaches and how they're viewed behind the scenes certainly contributes to that as well. Yeah, in terms of Hogg or Kraus, obviously we didn't get too much out of Liam Manning on that one. He didn't quite decline to answer, but I don't think it was far off when Paddy asked if there was any update on that. I think, to be honest, that Finley's analysis is probably correct. I mean, when you look at that situation, and whenever Bristol City do bring in a new head coach, which sounds like it's a process that's moving along quite quickly now. So hopefully there will be a solution fairly quickly. And just like I'm sure Manning would probably not have worked or liked to work with, you know, Riddersholm, who was very much although he hadn't worked with Turrup before, I think that the link between those two was very clear. And obviously the Wilshere element we've discussed plenty as well in terms of how having him behind the scenes and behind the new head coach would have impacted things. It's a very similar debate, really, isn't it, when you consider what Hogg and Kraus, what they could offer to a new head coach at Bristol City. And definitely they have a lot of experience in the EFL. They're obviously highly rated by Manning, given he's sort of taken them since working with them at Oxford United. He worked with Hogg even before then. He's taken them to every club he's worked at. So he clearly rates them highly. But I think just in terms of how important it is for a head coach to have at least some of their own people. And obviously we saw that with Torup in his comments about where it went wrong at Norwich. It would feel a little bit strange and probably unlikely that somebody would go in there and keep two coaches who are very much sort of connected to Manning and have been part of Manning's setup for a long while. So I think that may well be part of the thinking. Obviously, the reports at the Bristol end have said that the compensation hasn't been met. So although I'm sure Norwich do have those finances available, they want to spend obviously as little as they can on compensation so that they can then go and spend on transfers and wages and other things that obviously cost a considerable amount of money. So I think if Norwich could avoid compensation, then they would. And as for in the outlines, that's probably the most realistic scenario in which they get Kraus and Hogg for free. So yeah, I think that's probably some pretty good analysis from Finlay. And the pinch point on that one will probably come, when Bristol City get a new head coach, which it looks like will be fairly soon. So yeah, hopefully some progress to come on that one. But unfortunately, not too much clarity provided by Manning today on that one.
Yes, let's talk a little bit about transfers, what the people want. There's lots of questions and comments around it. Maybe before we delve into individual names and sort of various things, let's maybe assess the squad as a whole. Clearly, it was a question sort of put to Liam Manning and Ben Napper. You know, where do they sort of see the squad at the moment and the current state of play? DRG saying, don't know if this has already been mentioned, but you guys, Liam Manning, the forward line excited me, which is something he did say. Can't help but feel Sergeant Borja will be going. What exactly is there to be excited about? So I suppose, what did you make of his kind of comments around the whole squad, Connor? Because clearly he feels there's quality within this group.
Yeah, clearly. I think, you know, I'd put Antti Sienats into that conversation, definitely. I don't think it was as headline grabbing as obviously Josh Sargent and Borja Sainz, but I don't think it should go unnoticed. The goals he scored and the contribution that he had in his first year in England, I thought was pretty impressive, all told, for somebody who played the majority of his minutes out wide. I'm going to say it. There'll be people who are frustrated by it, but Matej Jurasek as well. There's a lot of excitement about him internally. Clearly, I know a lot of frustration around his situation, but hopefully come pre-season, there'll be an option there that is pretty much fresh, isn't it, for Liam Manning really to utilise. And obviously, I don't think we can talk around maybe Borja Sainz more so, but Josh Sargent at this stage, I don't think is absolutely nailed on guarantee that he departs the football club. I still think there's a lot of things that would have to happen, and clearly there's a pretty big fee that would have to be paid, really, to force their hand and to sell him. It was notable Liam Manning was very visibly nodding when Ben Napper described him as the best striker in the Championship, and he is. And so I'm sure that there will be a part of Liam Manning that is really excited to work with him. I would maybe also extend that to the midfield as well. But again, it's not necessarily just about what they did last season. Liam Manning will be looking at the data behind it. He'll be looking at the profiles. He's got the mix of profiles. I think, especially now, if Lewis Dobbin doesn't return, with Onel Hernandez gone as well, I think there's an argument for some pace in that final line. Absolutely, that feels to me like maybe an element that they're missing. I felt they missed Lewis Dobbin towards the end of the season in some of those games where they just appeared a bit one-dimensional, particularly at Carrow Road. When you're playing against a lower block, it can be really important to have that sort of threat in behind, and they kind of lost that. So that would be one point that I would make. But look, crucially, you only need to look at the attacking data and the goals that Norwich scored, right? And yes, of course, those two guys were huge in that. But equally, there was a whole team behind them that helped get the ball into those areas, that helped fashion those opportunities. For me, it's more about the other end. It's about making Norwich more solid. And clearly, you know, and I know we'll come on to speak about one individual in particular, but you look at defensively, the need for goalkeepers. Clearly, I know they've got one in the building, and I think we're still waiting, obviously, on that number one. I think defensively, you could pinpoint two or three areas they need improvement, midfield likewise. So we don't know kind of what irons they've got in the fire from an attacking perspective either. But I would push back on that slightly. I do think there is a lot within this Norwich squad to be excited about, both in terms of a youth perspective, but also some of those guys who maybe didn't kick on in the way that we would anticipate. I've just got a funny feeling it might be Antti Siinats that in 12 months, when it's Sargent and Borja Sainz in those names, that could be one that we're talking about, because I think there is a real potential in there for him to explode, really, in terms of goals if played it in the right position. And equally, again, we don't yet know a Jurasek or and even an Oscar Schwartau we haven't really seen the best of. So he, as I said right at the top, he is backing himself by taking this role to ensure that he pushes those players on. And what he is getting compared to what Johannes Hoftorup got last summer is he's inheriting Antti Siinats after 46 championship games, roughly. He didn't play all of them, I know, but 40-plus. Oscar Schwartau, 40-plus. Jose Cordoba, even in those areas. So he is getting a version of them that is more developed and more hardened, I guess, to the second tier in England than Johannes Hoftorup got. And I think I'd be quite excited by that prospect if I was Liam Manning, to be honest.
Agreed, yeah. Talking about sort of profiles of individuals, Sam, a lot maybe has been made around Liam Manning working with a lot of domestic players, you know, players from Britain generally, maybe less so from sort of different backgrounds. And Norwich within their squad at the moment is quite diverse in terms of age profiles and players from different countries. So what did you kind of make of his response to that? You know, said when he worked in Belgium and at the City Group, he maybe had 16 different nationalities at one point. So clearly he's able to kind of manage that, I suppose, within a squad.
Yeah, I think that's an unbelievable stat. That must have been up there with the most diverse sort of squad that's ever been put together. If it was 16 different nationalities out of 25 players, yeah, that's pretty unbelievable. And to be honest, I don't know if it was a criticism that was levelled at him a lot when he was at Bristol City, but it felt like one that he was very ready to come back on. It felt like one he was fairly combative about, but I sort of agreed with what he said, to be honest. I think you look at some of the roles that he's been in, and I think it does depend by the club. I think Bristol City, although there were also criticisms of his sort of lack of youth development and the small number of players who he brought through the academy there for a few years actually before he went in, and when Nigel Pearson was in charge, they actually produced quite a lot of players out of that academy. So he went into a club that had a lot of good young English players already ready to go. Max Bird and Jason Knight, of course, were also signed and came in as very talented players. So sometimes if you go into an English club and the English players are the best players, you know, that it does just sort of make sense to build a team around them. But yeah, you look at his background, he has worked in three different countries, as long as I'm not forgetting about any of them. So he does have a sort of decent background in terms of the variety of different players that he's worked with. That man management point that I also spoke about earlier suggests he's somebody who can work with different types of personalities and players from sort of different areas. But also you have to remember that, as I was talking about in terms of the academy production at Bristol City before he arrived, when you go into different clubs, the recruitment mechanisms are also very different from club to club. So a lot of clubs will have, aside from a head coach, or if there's not a sporting director, sometimes even aside from that sort of thing, they have sort of mechanisms set up to scout in different areas. Like at Norwich, you know, we've spoken a lot over the last few years about South America, and particularly 2 or 3 years ago, that was a big way, or a big part of how they did things. Before that, it was Germany, and each club has scouting networks that work in particular ways and back themselves in particular markets and feel that there are particular markets for them to exploit. Clearly, Bristol City is a club where they believe in the English market, in the EFL, and that's not something we've really seen at Norwich under Ben Napper. So I think how he adapts to that will be important, but I did find it interesting that he, from what I could gather from his response, it felt like he did think that was something he needed to respond to, and it felt like a response that had been almost formulated in his mind. So it'll be interesting to go back and see how much criticism he had on that topic when he was at Bristol City, because it felt like something he was very ready to answer. But as much as, you know, it's just words right now, and we'll have to wait and see what the transfer market does and how things unfold from a recruitment perspective. I did sort of believe what he had to say, and I thought he made some good points in terms of his experience previously. So yeah, I thought that was a pretty good answer. And to be honest, given the way that Napa operated last summer, I think it's important that he can coach sort of foreign players and players from different markets, because it's clear that Norwich want to get as much value for their money as they possibly can. And to be honest, although there are plenty of good players in the EFL and they can obviously come in without as much of an adaptation period, I think value is probably one thing that English players aren't necessarily known for in the transfer market. So I think that is something that he will have to adapt to. But as far as the credentials that he set out when he was asked that question, I thought it was a pretty good defence of his record previously. And yeah, I think he does have the CV that suggests he should be able to adapt to any squad of players, really.
Yes, I think it's fair to say, Connor, that there's been a lot maybe made around players he's worked with previously, and we've seen one of those already arrive at the football club in the form of Dan Grimshaw in goal, and there's a link to a centre-back we're going to speak around it in a little while. A few people maybe asking around the question directly around bringing players back from Bristol City that he's worked with previously. George saying seems slightly uncomfortable at the question whether he can target Bristol's players. Do you see that as a realistic possibility? I also saw somebody else, I think it was Shaney, NCFC, saying, can you see Manning and Napa getting players from Bristol City to fit into the way of us playing? What did you maybe make of his response to that particular question?
Yeah, interesting. I think we have to take from it, because they were asked and they didn't say there was, that sometimes these clauses can be put in agreements where clubs aren't allowed to go back in for players for a certain period of time. I think that was the case with Ben Napper and Arsenal for a period of time. So it does happen. We can only take that's not the case, I would imagine, because it was a release clause. There wasn't sort of a need for those negotiations to take place, because it wasn't kind of a compensation package as we would usually think about. It was just Norwich going in and saying, yep, we'll pay the 800,000, give or take, figure it was, that they didn't need to sit down and kind of thrash out those terms. So, yeah, I think it is an option to them. How keen he would be able to do, I'm not sure, because clearly that's a club that means a lot to him. I think he will be very conscious of maybe the image of that going in and taking players is quite difficult. I mean, the last Norwich head coach really that I can think about doing it was Paul Lambert with Colchester when he went back and raided them. Obviously, I think the clubs were on probably very different terms. I think it was all very amicable between Norwich and Bristol City throughout this process. So yeah, look, I think it's only a strength, isn't it, to have players that the head coach has worked with and knows and gives you kind of a clearer recruitment process, because they understand the character of them. And clearly the head coach has to be involved in recruitment processes, even if they don't have the final say. It is a pretty big say that they do get. And yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to kind of see in that world, in that hypothetical world that we're talking about, which one of those players would be. Because for me at the moment, it feels like a Jason Knight, for example, which is I know the headline grabbing name that people will speak about because of how good he was last year. He feels to me probably someone that would be on the radar of Premier League clubs. Someone like a Max Bird or maybe an Anis Mometi, would they potentially come into the conversation? Max O'Leary, the goalkeeper. I know clearly Norwich are in the market for a goalkeeper. Again, these are kind of interesting elements, I think. And yeah, we'll obviously see. I'm sure they will form part of any conversation that Liam Manning and Ben Napper have over the coming days, and they're going to have plenty. Ben Napper said that in terms of recruitment. So I think it would be remiss of them not to look in a market that the head coach knows very well. But equally, with obviously the name that we're going to discuss in a moment, there's an example of a player who wasn't at Bristol City that Liam Manning knows very well. So I don't think we should limit it to, and Dan Grimshaw as well, by the way. So I don't think we should limit it to just Bristol City. I think clearly they're, over his sort of four and a bit years, he's worked with plenty of players, plenty of talent, and will obviously have connections with players even who he hasn't worked with before. So yeah, I think it maybe does open a slightly different channel to Norwich City's recruitment pool to maybe the one that they would have worked off this summer, which I don't think, to be honest, that the set ones in terms of the list that Ben Napper and the recruitment team would have been working to prior to this appointment would have changed too much, whether it was Torup or Manning in the hot seat. What does change is obviously, and we saw it last summer with Slimani, with Schwartau, with Marcondes latterly as well, that actually a head coach can come in and can push some names forward that they really want. And I'm sure Liam Manning will be very keen to do that, whether or not they're Bristol City players or not, we'll see.
Yes, and before we talk about a certain Swansea centre-back, Jonathan's saying, did you guys get any news regarding being any close new signings? I suppose Napa was maybe asked around this sort of mini window, Sam, and whether that we could see any activity between now and I think it's tomorrow night when that technically shuts. But then, you know, the window reopens fairly shortly and technically Norwich can sign players within that time and then officially confirm them when the window reopens. So it's a little bit kind of maybe been made a little bit more than needs be. But what did you make in terms of his response there? Doesn't feel like there's anything that imminent?
No, I think he was, although he was keen to add the usual caveats, and I don't think he wanted to promise anyone anything. I think that was as close as a guarantee as you can get, really, to the fact that probably that was their business done for this little mini window. But as far as the significance of that, I would agree with you that I could see them, even if they signed a player on Wednesday, which is the day after it shuts, just announcing, you know, they've signed this player from this club and the transfer will become official on the 16th of June. We've seen it before when players are out of contract. I think it happened with Ashley Barnes last season when, you know, it happened with Jose Cordoba as well, I think. Barnes was 2 years ago, Cordoba was last season. This season, Jacob Wright was actually confirmed before the window opened as well. So I don't think that's actually going to be too much of a hindrance. I think it's been used more just as a barometer of how close signings are. And it sounds right now, based on that, like there isn't anything particularly close. We know they're very keen to press on with the transfer business as quickly as possible. I think we saw that with Dan Grimshaw, and from speaking to sort of a couple of people around and in the club a few weeks ago, it sounded like they were quite confident that a second goalkeeper would be quite quick as well. So I think that's something they're quite keen to do as soon as possible. Obviously, there's been Vladan Kovacevic talked about as well. He's one of their options in that department. And I think they would probably like that goalkeeping department wrapped up as soon as possible, because if you go into pre-season games and you don't have your number one, I think that's a bit of a problem, because how do you sort of start to build a team structure, especially when so much is made of goal kicks and building out from the back and things like that. If the person who it's hoped will play every single game next season isn't there to start those sort of attacks and those sort of processes, I think that's tactically a bit of a problem. So I think they'd like that one done as quickly as possible. There have been a few other names mentioned. One of them, as we keep teasing, we'll come on to shortly. But it didn't sound, from what Napa said, like anything was particularly close. Obviously, that window does shut at 7 p.m. tomorrow, so it would have to be quite a quick turnaround from what Napa's just said to that signing being completed. So although I could see something being done fairly soon, and I don't actually see that the end of that mini window as much of a hindrance in reality at all, just as far as news breaking and fans having that confirmation of a third signing of the window, yeah, it did sound from what Napa said like not going to be too much over the next few days. So it's a good thing we've got a big old chunk of quotes from him and Manning to use. But yeah, for right now, I think probably the transfer news is going to be parked a little bit. But if you look at the amount of business that they have to do and the spacing that's going to be needed between those signings, how quickly pre-season is coming up, you'd like to think that they'll have some more news fairly quickly, just not over the next couple of days, it seems.
Yes, let's talk about him now then. Harry Darling at Swansea, 25-year-old centre-back, out of contract this summer, albeit Swansea have got an offer on the table for him. There's notable interest from the likes of Wrexham and Birmingham. There's the link between Liam Manning and Harry Darling from MK Dons. You know, evidently Norwich in the market more than likely for a centre-back, you know, with some of the departures they saw within that area. Sam on YouTube saying, what did you make of Ben Napper and Liam Manning's reaction when asked about Darling? Their faces, when his name was mentioned, said a lot. Just going to quickly play that clip now and then we'll talk a little bit about it.
But have you been on the phone to Harry? He's out of contract, isn't he? So he's certainly someone that I'm sure you'd love to bring to the club, though.
Look, I think I had a terrific time with Harry a few years ago at MK and I thought he was outstanding. And look, he's really excelled at the level for me. I think he's someone that's, you know, shown what he's capable of at championship level. And, you know, there's not a huge amount of players at his age or his profile that are available. So, of course, he'll have a large amount of interest. But he's, you know, he's definitely someone for me that, you know, I think would be a good fit.
There we go. I know Swansea's director of football has also been in a little bit of talking about Harry Darling and his future. So what do you make of it all, Connor, and these links? Is he one that Norwich fans could potentially be excited about arriving at Carrow Road this summer?
Yes, with caution. I think clearly, and look, I think as ever, when you kind of do the job that we do, you hear lots of names, particularly over the summer, and it all gets a little bit febrile. I think look, Harry Darling's one that has been clearly one that they're interested in for a little while. I think when we did the story last week, now I think and the connections with Liam Manning are pretty clear, going back to those MK days where he was very good. And albeit I know he kind of knew Russell Martin, who took him to MK Dons and then obviously to Swansea, but it was probably under Manning really that he had his best spell at MK to really get that move to the Championship. So yeah, lots to like about him, as Manning said there, his age, his availability, where he is in terms of his career. We spoke about kind of the value of understanding the challenge of the Championship. There's somebody who can do that, and got a goal in him by all accounts as well. Someone who's very technical, would think suit where Norwich are in terms of his profile, but also in terms of his qualities. So yeah, it's clearly one that is of interest, and clearly someone that Liam Manning knows well, Cambridge boy as well. So if we want to play on the geography stuff again, not a million miles away, or albeit not a million miles away from the Midlands either, if you wanted to play that game. So yeah, look, I think it's clearly one they would like. You're always conscious when Birmingham or Wrexham are mentioned. I suspect, by the way, that they'll be mentioned around a lot of players this summer, and that's clearly coming up with a lot of finance, but equally there needs to be a solid kind of football strategy behind that. So depends what Harry Darling's motivations are. None of us know that for sure, and so it's always difficult to comment. But yeah, I thought their reactions were pretty telling. That answer was pretty clear. He's one they would like to bring if the world's aligned, and they could get something done, I think they would. But clearly, I think there's a lot of competition, and they will have a whole list of fullback options if that one doesn't come about. But yeah, centre back, centre midfield, goalkeeper, I think we could list a few positions, are clearly one that they'd like to be active on. But yeah, I think with Harry Darling, it's very much a case of watch this space. I would be shocked if that in the next couple of weeks or so didn't move in some sort of direction, be it at Norwich or elsewhere, because what feels clear is that he's not going to stay at Swansea, because if he's had kind of two offers put on the table and hasn't accepted either of them, kind of feels like his future is elsewhere. And as we spoke about earlier, Norwich are still a very attractive Championship proposition, with obviously the added bonus that they've got someone in the dugout that he knows very well. So yeah, watch this space, I think, with Harry Darling.
Yes, so maybe one that was at Carrow last year that also got asked around in this press conference, Sam, Lewis Dobbin, who I know, you know, Ben Knappe was asked a question when we done the round of media down at Colney last month, and said maybe, you know, he's still on his recovery journey after that sort of injury, a calf injury at Blackburn. George saying still surprised there's any interest in Dobbin, to be honest. Injury prone, would require a big fee, plus not Manning's choice. I mean, what did you make of Ben Knappe's response to that, and maybe Lewis Dobbin still being a Norwich player next season?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and I wrote about it a little bit in our Pink and Plus newsletter, if I can just be allowed to plug that for a second, pinkand.com/subscribe for that every day. And yeah, at that point, the feeling was that probably the club and the player were sort of looking at other options, not necessarily completely having moved on, but they didn't see Dobbin as necessarily the single wide solution, with Borja Sainz potentially leaving the club this summer. And I think that wide area is something that they do need to address after Ono Hernandez was obviously released as well. So yeah, I think although he's someone they do like, it doesn't feel like it's maybe as nailed on as Johannes Hoftorp seemed to feel it was when he was asked about him. I thought, actually, I remember being quite surprised a few months ago when in one of the press conferences he was asked about Dobbin and whether there was a likelihood of him coming back this season, obviously when Torup was expecting to remain in charge. And he seemed pretty confident at that point that a deal would be done. We know that Norwich have this first refusal on a season-long loan, but that would require, obviously, Dobbin's consent. Dobbin would have to choose to come to Norwich as well. So it doesn't feel like one that's maybe necessarily as nailed on as it felt at one point, but still somebody who they're definitely looking at. They were very impressed with the performances he produced both in training and on the pitch when he was fit and was available to play for Norwich. But it is interesting that injury that George mentions, and the fact that given the problems Norwich had last season around injuries, I think obviously Knappe spoke after the season about the sort of review they conducted, how much they'd looked into it. And although there are clearly going to be other factors going into it when you consider the wide range of players who were injured at various points in the season, I wonder if they will be ever so slightly more cautious around sort of signing players who are maybe slightly more injury prone this season. I think they'll want a squad that's full of players who are capable of playing on a regular basis. You look at Manning's Bristol City last season, they only used 24 players in the whole championship season, which was 11 fewer than Norwich used. It was the least in the whole of the division. So that suggests that maybe he likes to work with a little bit of a slimmer squad. And if you're going to do that, you have to have a squad of players that are fit and ready to go most weeks. So I wonder if that will come into their thinking a little bit. Clearly still a player they like. And that was basically what Napa said. You know, there are still discussions ongoing. Him and his representatives are still talking to Norwich at the moment. They're still talking to Aston Villa, where he's currently doing his rehabilitation from that injury that obviously he started doing at Colney. So it's an interesting situation. I don't think one to completely strike off just yet. But it does feel like he's now, rather than someone who they definitely want to bring back and who's likely to come back, like he's one of a number of options in those wide areas that they're considering this summer. So yeah, but one to definitely to follow. And Napa certainly didn't come close to killing it when he was asked the question this morning, but I think maybe slightly more complex than it felt at one point, definitely.
Staying on the theme of wide men, Connor, but maybe one that might be leaving Carrow Road rather than joining Borja Sainz, who there's been, you know, a lot of interest in over the course of the summer. We've spoken around him a lot on these shows, but there's been a few firm offers on the table for him, maybe not meeting the valuation that Norwich want at the moment, but interest is definitely circulating around him and his future. Just going to quickly play a clip and then we'll talk a little bit about his future.
Can I ask you for an update on Borja? Because there's a lot of external noise, a lot of clubs getting linked to him. You know, what is the reality? Is there any offers that have met your valuation yet?
Not yet. Listen, we've had multiple formal offers. It's not a surprise for a player of that level who performed how he did last season. So yeah, there's big interest from particularly a couple of different clubs, but there's others circling as well. We've had formal proposals, but nothing's quite met our valuation. Those discussions are ongoing. Let's see how they conclude. But yeah, of course, he's a player with big interest in the market. But it's still early, and as I said, it's got to be right for us. We've shown an ability, I think, at this club long before my time to sell players really well. It's part of our strategy, and that'll be no different with Borja.
Yeah, a couple of clubs in Italy and Portugal supposedly put offers on the table. Connor, what did you make of Ben Napa's response to that question and Borja's future?
Yeah, pretty open, I felt, in terms of where the situation is at. As he kind of confirmed that, I think we've been reporting it now for a few days. Two clubs in particular, one towards the top end of Serie A, one of the bigger Portuguese clubs as well, I think it's fair to say. Making multiple offers between them for Borja Sainz. Clearly there are others who have not come to the table yet. I think we're aware of interest in Spain, Greece, England on top of that. So it goes to show sort of the level of interest that there is in Borja Sainz, which I think really, if we're being brutally honest about it, he will leave this summer. I don't think I'm saying anything there that's particularly controversial. If he stays now, brilliant. But certainly the way it's going at the moment feels like it's pretty guaranteed that he goes. The level of interest is there. The fact that clubs are coming to the table, and I think also his contractual situation as well. It's in everyone's interest, really, for every party to try and make something happen this summer. Clearly, it's in Norwich's interest to try and get as many of those teams to the table as possible, because it's a negotiating power, right? If you've got loads of offers there, you can play them off against each other. And I'm sure it does Norwich's cause little harm for those clubs maybe who are circling but are yet to come to the table, to know that there are some clubs who are already at the table but not quite at a level where Norwich feel it is. And also, if you have multiple interested teams, then it allows you to kind of hold firm on your valuation, because you've got more kind of parties that maybe can try and meet that. So I think it's a good place for Norwich to be in at the moment. And look, clearly they've given Borja Sainz permission, his camp permission, to go and try and find something because of where he's at contractually. And I think it's probably timing-wise, it feels like the right moment for him probably to move on and find a different challenge. It was a very, very good season. for him, and clearly I think it's very unlikely that he'd sign a new deal at Norwich, so it's in their interest, and now it's just about getting it to the level. It feels like that will happen at some stage during this summer. I think probably the sooner the better, but we're still in early June, and so we've still got a long way for this summer and this transfer window to run. And for Norwich, it would be good, and we've seen it in other summers as well. If you can get a fairly big one done relatively early, it doesn't half help with what you can do from an incoming perspective as well. So, and also it allows you then to hold even firmer on Josh Sargent and even firmer on your valuation, knowing that you've kind of already had a big sum in. So, yeah, I think all in all, I feel Norwich are in a pretty good place with it at this moment in time. And you know, clearly, I'm sure there will be others come to the table. I'm sure there'll probably be some Spanish clubs come to the table. That's probably my expectation of what the next wave looks like. It feels at the moment, just again, not based off knowledge, this point, but off my own feeling, it probably feels like he'd like to go back to Spain. So if that's his preference and if those clubs can get to the level, then there's a deal to be done there. But clearly it's got to be on Norwich's terms, as Ben Napper utilised. And it's a helpful public point, isn't it, that he can make to try and help push that cause and push maybe a few clubs either to increase those bids or to come to the table. So, yeah, all told, I think Norwich are in a good position with that. But I would be shocked if we ended the summer with Borja Sainz, a Norwich City player. I just don't see that as realistic. And, you know, now it's probably about how quickly they can get it moving. I think personally, I don't think you really want to be in a position where Sainz is still having to report back for pre-season at the start of next month. I think ideally you'd have this wrapped up by the end of June, but we all know you can have your ideals, but it's all about what the market wants and how it moves and how quickly it moves as well. So yeah, again, it is a bit kind of watch this space on him, but it feels like it's maybe getting to a place now where we can begin to look to a Norwich City world post Borja Sainz rather than with him in it.
Yes, and before we maybe answer some of the other questions that are in the comment section for the last 5 or 10 minutes, let's talk about the other big hitter, Sam. Josh Sargent, kind of mentioned him there, and evidently there's interest in him. You know, Ben Napper was fairly open with that. Roma are certainly one that are supposedly evaluating him as an option, and there will certainly be other clubs that come to the table over the course of the summer. What did you maybe make of his sort of response around Sargent and maybe his future at the club?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's clearly more complex than the Sainz situation. I think, to be honest, first of all, on the pitch next season, as far as my opinion goes, it's pretty much a guarantee that Sargent would offer them probably more than Sainz and would be a more important part of what Norwich would do. There's also the contractual element that Napper actually referenced. When asked the question, Sargent has 3 years left on his contract, which is obviously not an insignificant amount of time, whereas Sainz only has the 12 months. And ultimately, he's a striker as well, who, you know, which means that probably there is a higher valuation. Certainly when you put the whole package together, that you'd expect that Norwich will want much more for Sargent than they would for Sainz. I wouldn't say that they would necessarily be against selling him. I think if somebody comes in with the right sort of money, they would pretty much sell most of that squad, to be honest, as long as they had time to get a replacement in. That's just the model of the club. But we know that Napa likes to push for as much money as possible as he can for his best players. I think most people would agree that he got some very good fees for some of those top players last summer. So, yeah, I think the Sargent one is a bit more complex. We know that last summer, of course, they turned down a £20 million offer from Cincinnati for his services. So when they're turning that down, and he's now gone and scored another 15 goals in the Championship, despite a two-month or maybe it was three-month injury absence again, that tells you that the valuation will be significantly higher than £20 million. So, yeah, I think for a club to come in and take him, it's not so much taking a chance on him. I think with Sainz, if a club can come and get him for 12, 13 million, for some of the clubs of the size that are looking at him at the moment that have placed the formal bids, I don't think 12 or 13 million on a winger who could go and take off and score some amazing goals is too much. But if you're coming in, you're looking at a Championship striker and you're knowing you're going to have to commit, you know, upwards of 20 million for him, and he's got that injury record and things like that, I think it's not as easy a gamble to take for a potential buying club on Sargent as it maybe is on Sainz. So I think it's more complicated. I don't think that necessarily means that
Sargent stays. I think if I had to say one way or the other, I'd still probably guess that he does leave the club before the end of the transfer window. But as Napa said, it's not at quite the same advanced stage that Scythe is. They haven't received any formal offers. There has been interest and there have been clubs tracking his services and speaking to Norwich about potential deals that could happen. But to me, this feels like one that will rumble on for considerably longer than the Scythe one will probably. I think it's, yeah, as I said, a bit more of a complicated one. And that was basically what Napa kind of said. He talked about how good Sargent is and ultimately it's about how much he's worth to Norwich. And we know from how they've been with him and then without him when he's suffered those injuries in the last few seasons, how big an impact he has on them in that team. I think the injuries are an interesting element because ultimately he does have a track record now. It's not unlucky. It's not just a one-off that's been really bad. It does look like ultimately he can't really go a season of championship action without sustaining quite a serious injury. So if you look at that, I do wonder if that brings his price down by 5 million maybe. But still, I think a significant sum will be required to take him away from Carrow Road. It's a more complicated deal and that's probably why it's taking some more time. And ultimately, that's basically what Napa's comments reflected when he was asked about him at the press conference today.
Yes, I spent the last 5 or 10 minutes just answering a few of these other questions. Nate saying, any word on who striker targets might be, assuming that Sargent leaves? George liking the look of Salek at Cardiff as a potential replacement. Looked promising when we played them last season. Wouldn't demand huge money with them being in League One. Connor, sort of any updates, I suppose, or names you could throw in the hat in terms of a forward line replacement maybe for Sargent if he does depart?
Not at this stage. I think I would concur on Salek. I was very impressed with him on the last day of the season. And from what I've kind of read and looked into subsequently, that was very much a theme of kind of the second half of this season. I think to score 8 goals in any team that's relegated is a really good achievement. I'm sure he will have suitors. Whether he would have been one or is one or isn't one, I don't know. But I think what you would say is if Torup maybe would have remained at the club and they'd have still had that Danish element, maybe he would have been one that by now naturally would have been linked. That's not to say he isn't one or is one they're looking at this moment in time. But no, nothing I would say publicly on this stage. For me, it's going to be interesting to see how they do it because clearly there is, as Sam kind of mapped out there, that there is an element that hinges onto what Sargent's future is because they only carry 2 strikers. I think they probably could have done with another one anyway, but that's a difficult role to sell people. Do Norwich go and try and be proactive and do as they did under Stuart Webber a lot, actually, when he was sporting director, go and get their replacement before selling? Because if you then sell Sargent and you're looking for a striker and clubs kind of know you've had that fee, it can really push prices up. Strikers are expensive anyway. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting one to see how they navigate that. And probably if we get to a stage where maybe they're looking for a striker or aren't looking for a striker, then we can maybe draw confidence about what that means either way for Josh Sargent's prospects of staying at the club. So, yeah, no names that I can definitively throw in at the moment. So, yeah, again, I think it's just going to be one that we're going to have to see how it develops and evolves. We've still got, what was it, September? So, what, July, August, 2 months, yeah, of this. So, yeah, I think with Sargent in particular, though, that feels one that could run on really late. And it wouldn't surprise me as, yeah, Kieran's just kind of taken the word out of my mouth there. If it was kind of a dual one that we saw maybe a winger forward, multi-role players that could do that. They certainly looked at that last summer with obviously Yildirim, who was an option, and obviously Antti Siinats who came in and did that. So yeah, we'll see on that front and see how it develops.
Yes, I've seen a few people maybe mention the man that Kieran's mentioned there in terms of Tyrese Dolan, one that's maybe in Norwich having supposed interest in amongst many other football clubs. Tying that maybe in a little bit with Adam's question, do you think Norwich being fairly isolated from the rest of the country and relatively quiet is an obstacle to getting players to come? Sort of two-parter there, Sam. Tyrese Dolan update, but maybe sort of those sort of individuals that are being linked. Does Norwich's location maybe relative to the rest of the country come into it at all?
I mean, that's always been a criticism that's been levelled. I remember going back to the sort of Alex Neil days and some of the names that would be linked at that point. It did feel like that was a little bit of a factor in those decisions. Ultimately, it's not something that Norwich can really change too much. So I'm sure that's something they haven't thought about too much. But I think mainly
And Manning kind of underlined this with how he talked about the head coach role. Football is a short career, and I would say that most players are probably dictated by their ambition, by their career opportunities, and what they feel Norwich represents to them in a footballing sense. I mean, there are factors going in Norwich's favour, and it's a very nice city, and that's not just my bias. That's, I think, what a lot of people would say. So ultimately, I don't think it's the deciding factor in the large majority of decisions. There will, of course, have been players who have been before, who have liked the training ground, who have liked what the football club is about, and just felt that location-wise it wasn't the best for them. But that's not something that Norwich can really change. And I would think, given it's a short career and a lot of players are ambitious, they want to play at the highest level, if Norwich gives you a chance to do that, then I would say that probably dictates things more than location. But yeah, I think obviously players are people as well, and that will be a consideration. As far as Tyrese Dolan, it does feel like it's very much in that free agent bracket of they'll have a lot of options. I'm sure at the moment he's probably on holiday and considering some of those options. So it might be a while until things move for him. But it does sound like he's a player who people really like. He's a very good age, had a good season with Blackburn, and is available on a free transfer. So I think it's another one that you can file under. Yeah, a lot of competition. So probably still a bit of time before sort of Dolan's future is revealed. But yeah, right now it's hard to make them favourites when you consider how many clubs are probably going to be in for him. The size of the clubs. I think Rangers were another one that were sort of touted with interest in him. So yeah, probably wait and see on that one. But yeah. That strikes me as maybe one of the tougher ones to do when you think about how much speculation there's already been and sort of how readily available he is. You don't, as an English club, have to search very far to find Tyrese Dolan and find out that he's out of contract this summer. So, yeah, one to wait and see on, unfortunately. But yeah, that competition does sort of stand out to me a little bit at the moment.
Yes, thank you for the kind comment, Mark. But just sort of mentioning maybe the last bit there, Connor, in terms of preferred formation, that wasn't something that the Manning particularly gave away. I saw Josh also ask the question, any idea if it's going to be a back three or a back four? So what's maybe your takeaway in terms of a formation that Norwich might potentially be playing next season?
Yeah, good question. I don't know is the honest answer. And I think if we'd have asked Liam that today, I'm not sure he would know at this stage either. When he's gone into clubs, typically he's tried with a three and then kind of started with a four and then gone to a three. Doesn't mean that's what he's going to do at Norwich. I think what he has made a point of in previous interviews is that he is much more kind of principles led than systems led, I guess. So I wouldn't get too wedded on kind of what formation he would play. For example, Norwich played a 4-3-3 kind of base formation. That's kind of how we categorize it under Johannes Hoftorp last season. But actually, when you looked at their build-up, they often built up for back three, and there was five. It was kind of a 3-2-5. So there's always variations in these type of things. And I think Bristol as well at a point built up with a back four, even though they were kind of in a back three, so to speak. So I think he's quite flexible and adaptable. I think he will come in and assess the group of players he has. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think with the fullback options, Fisher to me feels more right back than right wing back. I think probably Mahovo and Krizene feel more kind of left back than left wing back. That's not to say they can't play those roles, but that's where I kind of feel that their preferred option is. So I think he'll come in, weigh up the squad, look at the profiles he's got in different areas and kind of take an assessment from there. But equally with the centre-backs that Norwich have, I think you could probably make a pretty decent case for playing with a back three as well, particularly if, let's say, hypothetically, they had Shane Duffy still in the building next year. You could see a world where he could be in the centre of a back three with maybe a Jose Cordoba to the left of him and maybe a more progressive option. Let's use Harry Darling because we've spoken about him today, but we could maybe insert Brad Hills or Rory McConville in there. You could see that as a back three kind of working and having a blend of kind of technical elements, physicality and those core fundamentals. You look at the role that kind of Rob Dickey played for Bristol City this year, where he was a bit more kind of not basic as a criticism, I mean that as a strength, but a bit more kind of basic in terms of head it, kick it, tackle, block, which are all really important qualities, and sometimes they get lost in defenders when we talk about distribution and whatnot. But he got that blend right with that back three. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if that's where they ended up. But my feeling, and it's only my gut feeling, is that Norwich will probably start with a four and maybe build up to a three. But I think they'll probably see them play both under Liam Manning, if I'm honest, at various points.
Yeah, sort of tying that into Finley's point, maybe around sort of the right centre-back clutch that Norwich have at the moment. Same with those three young right centre-backs. What do you think will happen come the end of the window? Surprise to him, McConville will upset with his lack of game time. Of course, got Ali Boyega, you got Brad Hill, still got Shane Duffy in the building as well at the moment. So what do you sort of make of that mix? And how does, I suppose, Ben Napper and Liam Manning sort of shape that moving into the summer, Sam?
Yes, an interesting one. I think on McConville, there was that quote, wasn't there, from the Irish commentator or the Northern Irish commentator from the game the other day. But I think that was more along the lines of he would have wanted more game time. Obviously, it's not been too much game time. But I think if you look at the fact that I think he'd only played one game for Brighton off the bench, I don't think it's been a negative progression for him and the amount of game time he got at Norwich. So I could see McConville stepping up, playing a bigger role. Obviously, Shane Duffy's in that right centre-back mix as well. And I think if somebody comes in and is willing to take his wages on and give him a new club, then probably Norwich would be open to that as well. And then, it comes down to Adebuyega, Hills as well. And obviously, Harry Darling, if they did manage to do that, he's right-footed as well, even though he's played on the left side primarily for Swansea. So yeah, it does feel like there are quite a lot of names, but to be honest, right now it feels like more quantity than quality. I think Brad Hills is obviously somebody who's barely played any championship minutes, looks pretty good at the top end of League One, but it would be quite a big leap to have him as a sort of regular starter already next season. So yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on. Adebuyega, I wasn't particularly convinced by Torup's comments on him last season, even though it looked like he was doing really well up at Dundee United, who are competing towards the top end of the Scottish Premiership, and he was playing a lot of minutes as well. It didn't sound like Torup was desperate to have him back and make him a starting centre-back this season, but this probably underlines why you don't want to get a new head coach every season, and that's that every time they come in and they inherit a squad, they have to assess everyone, they have to evaluate everyone in pre-season, and it becomes almost an audition for everyone rather than just an opportunity to work with those players and get them ready for the season. So you know, when you consider that, a lot of it comes down to Manning's individual judgment. Of course, he'll be helped out by sort of coaches and staff there, and Ben Napper, who will have had those conversations and seen those players on the training pitches. But ultimately, he does need to see those players and decide what sort of role they're going to have. So it feels like maybe towards the end of the summer, and when he's seen those players in some pre-season action, that's when the department will start to thin out a little bit. But yeah, the way that I characterise it right now in that right centre-back position is probably a bit too much quantity and not quite enough quality. So yeah, I could still see them acting. Obviously, if they could bring in a Darling, then maybe he could play on the left side or the right side. But yeah, right now it's very much TBC, given the fact that Manning hasn't worked with any of these players on the training pitch just yet. And it feels like probably some assessment is going to be needed during pre-season.
Yes, a couple of last questions to round off the show. Jeffman, good to see you sort of on the road to recovery. Seeing that on socials, we all wish you the best. Great to see you back on here as well, asking the questions. Connor, Jeffman saying, should we be expecting more pre-season fixtures announced soon? Would love a local one, not behind closed doors. You know, that pre-season was probably more made for Johannes Ovtorup. Liam Manning now in the building. Would you expect any changes to that particular schedule?
Firstly, echo your sentiments on Jeffman. Hope he is on the men now. And good to see you back on here. I think not sure we'll see any kind of ones added. I think we'll probably see some more clarity around the Dutch tour in terms of the fixtures and who they'll play and where they'll play and stuff like that. But yeah, in terms of that, I think it was pretty clearly weighted towards wanting kind of more training time, which don't know at this stage if that is what if that is what Liam Manning does or doesn't want. To be honest, he probably doesn't have a lot of choice at this stage. Clearly, Johannes inherited David Wagner's pre-season last year as well. So it's not been ideal, kind of the switch and the turnover in terms of coaches being able to properly implement the type of pre-season that they want on the group. But yeah, I don't see a world whereby suddenly there are going to be three, four, even one maybe pre-season fixture added. I think they're pretty set now that it will start with Northampton behind closed doors. Hopefully we'll be able to get in and give you guys some insight on that. And then obviously the Dutch leg before NAC Bray, they come to Carrow Road and we get to see Sidney van Hooijdonk again. So I think that probably feels like the pre-season as is at this moment in time. But yeah, we'll see. As I said, maybe there is a world that Liam Manning comes in and changes it, but I'd be very, very surprised at this stage if the schedule that isn't out there isn't the schedule that it ends up being, to be honest, particularly at this late notice. I mean, we're nearly a month away now, so there's not a whole lot of time and teams probably sorting themselves out elsewhere. So I don't see it at this stage, no.
Indeed, yeah. You'll be back reviewing Carrow sausage rolls very soon, Jeff, and which will all be good to see on our X timelines. Finley saying on YouTube, why did Weber only give Borja Sainz a three-year contract without an option, or why didn't Napa offer him a new deal? What sort of make of, I suppose, his contractual status getting to this point, Sam, relative maybe then to his value Norwich can sell him for?
Yeah, well, I think you have to consider that there was the contractual element with Sainz when he first signed. So obviously, he wasn't a free agent, but there was a relegation clause where they could sign him on a free. And I'm sure Norwich weren't the only club that knew about that that option. So when you've got someone you can sign on a free, ultimately the power is with the player a lot of the time. He just had a very good season in Turkey with Giresunspor. And although in hindsight, it's easy to say, you know, 3 years is barely anything. If it was him going and saying, you know, it's 3 years or I'm going to another club, and I'm sure he had a few other options, I think Weber was probably acting based on the fact that he had to attract this player who knew that he had the power in that scenario. So although in hindsight, it does feel quite frustrating that one of Norwich's higher value players is on one of their shortest contracts, I think it may have been the necessity of the situation at the time that sort of trapped Weber into making that decision. And on Napa and the potential to give him a new contract, I think if you take him at his word based on what he said at the AGM last year and since then, there has been conversation. I'm sure if Napa could have tied him down to a new four-year deal when he was scoring all those goals at the sort of midway through last season, then that's what he would have done. But ultimately, Sainz had no reason at that point to sign a new deal going into the summer before everyone knew Sainz was going to be that good. He still had 2 years left on his deal and he hadn't completely lit the championship up. So I think Napa did move to have those conversations as early as he possibly could when Sainz value was very high and it was clear that this was going to become a consideration. But ultimately, if you feel that you can play at a higher level, if you're getting noises that suggest there might be interest in you from bigger clubs, why would you sign a new deal to stay at Norwich? I think Napa knows that. I think Sainz knows that. And although there have been those conversations with his representatives for a long time now, ultimately, Napa can't make Sainz sign something if he doesn't want to sign it. So I don't necessarily feel like that's on Napa, to be honest. I think there have been those moves made. But yeah, ultimately, it's got to work for both parties. And that's not really been the case ever since Sainz hit form, really.
Yes, and a fun one from Jeffman to end the show. Lovely stuff, as per, gents. Fixture release day in a few weeks. Who do we all want on the first game of the season? So Connor, who would you sort of ideally want, maybe home or away?
Anyone at home, preferably one that's winnable. I will say someone random like a QPR at home. That'd do me.
Sam?
Ipswich at home. Doug, yeah. What about you, Adam?
Poor, I don't know. I mean, I think the idea of Bristol City at home would just, you know, in terms of everything that would be around that and you know, sort of him facing his old team straight away could be interesting. But even something like a Wrexham away, I would take that in the sunshine on the opening day, a new stadium tick off. So we'll have
definitely
to wait.
Would definitely be a Friday night, though, that, wouldn't it?
That's true.
That's the only thing putting me off that, you see.
Yeah, it's probably nailed on that they'll get one of the teams that come down anyway. Mm. You know, all the fixtures are, you know, supposedly random, but we'll leave that there. With that, we're going to sign off this lunchtime. Of course, thanks for joining us this afternoon for all our reaction there to Liam Manning's first words as Norwich City's head coach. All the good analysis and everything you'll need is across the Pink and channels. You can take out a subscription to the Pink and Plus, $2.99 a month. You've got the newsletter thrown in with that and all the good content coming your way this summer. There'll be all the transfers. There'll be pre-season and of course, that fixture list that's coming out fairly shortly. So the season will soon be rolling around before you know it. August will be here and we start again. So we'll have you covered across the Pinken channels. Also, of course, the YouTube channel. Take out a subscription to that free of charge. Hit that down below. We're on the road now to 11,000. So hopefully we can tick that off before the season starts. With that, we're going to sign off. All the good content coming your way. Thanks for joining us this lunchtime. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll see you in the next one.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.